every accreting black hole, which has a luminosity not too much below the Eddington limit, probably has an inner part in its accretion flow where the radiation pressure is much bigger than the gas pressure. And in studying these flows, I've had good advice from Jim Stone, Julian Krolik, and Takayoshi Sano. We still have only a rough picture of these accretion flows. And a big part of the problem is the limited spatial resolution that we can get. As a result, some of the basic physical processes which determine the structure of the flow are still quite unknown. One of the important ones is, how is angular momentum removed from the gas so that it can spiral closer to the event horizon? Another is, how is the released gravitational energy converted into photons, and how do they escape from the disk to reach our detectors? In 1973, Shakura and Sunyaev suggested that we boil down most of our uncertainties into one parameter. They suggested that both the angular momentum transport and the energy release are due to something which acts like a viscosity. And they suggested that the viscosity is some constant alpha times the vertically averaged pressure at each radius in the accretion disk. But the question is, should that be the total pressure or the gas pressure alone? If it's the total pressure, then the disk is subject to many instabilities. And in the time since 1973, there's been a lot of work on just what the accretion stress should be proportional to. The key to answering many of these questions turns out to be turbulence driven by the magnetorotational instability, which Charles Gammy and Chris Reynolds have described in previous talks. In local axisymmetric calculations, the instability can lead only to a brief period of turbulence, only a few orbits, because numerical dissipation of the magnetic field eventually kills the instability. So today I'd like to talk about some of the first calculations which include magnetic effects in three dimensions and also radiation. And the body of the talk is going to be in two main parts. One section will I'll show results from calculations with initially uniform vertical magnetic fields, and then the other main part of the body I'll talk about calculations with zero net magnetic flux. And for each section, some of the aspects of the turbulence and the disk structure that I'll discuss are the compressibility, the ways that the energy is dissipated into heat, and the nature of the accretion stress. But first I want to tell you about the method and initial conditions for the calculations. The domain is a small patch in the interior of the disk, so its height is one half of the half thickness of the disk, and its width is the same, and its direction along the direction of orbital motion is four times greater. We use this little brick, which is embedded in the disk, is co-rotating at the Keplerian speed for its center, and we're using a local set of coordinates in which we neglect curvature of the orbit, and x represents radius, y is distance along the orbit, and z is distance from the disk midplane, so the midplane is here. And we're neglecting the vertical component of gravity because we're interested in what happens in the deep disk interior. And because we're neglecting the vertical component of gravity, it's reasonable to have periodic boundaries in the vertical direction. It's also periodic along the orbit, and it's shearing periodic in radius. So, for example, a blob of gas which goes out the inner boundary will reappear at a different azimuthal position on the outer boundary and orbiting slower, appropriate for its greater distance from the black hole. And as a result of these periodic boundary conditions, the flux, the magnetic flux, is conserved. So if we start with a vertical flux, say, that'll be there throughout the calculation, and there'll be no way for the field to die away. On the other hand, if we start with zero net flux, some field pointing down and some pointing up, then that'll be true throughout the calculation as well. And it is possible in that case for the oppositely directed fields to be brought together and to cancel, and for the magnetic field to die away completely. So if the field does not die away and is sustained, then that suggests dynamo action. So we have a domain. Now, what should we fill it with? Well, for want of any better information, we use values taken from a Shikura-Sanyaev model. We use a density and a temperature. And we've chosen parameters for that model that might be appropriate for an AGN. 10 to the 8 solar masses at the center, an accretion rate 10% of the Eddington limit for a radiative efficiency of 10%, and the ratio of the accretion stress to the total pressure of 0.01. And the calculations I'm going to show here are centered at one of two locations, either at radius A, which is about 35 Schwarzschild radii, where the radiation pressure is 125 times the gas pressure in this model, or at location B, which is at about 90 Schwarzschild radii, and here the radiation pressure is 10 times the gas pressure. And at both these locations, the Keplerian speed is about 10% of the speed of light, and the optical depth is mostly due to scattering opacity, that's shown by this line here, and it's between 10 to the 4 and 10 to the 6 at both these locations, so the disk is optically very thick. There's also a much smaller free-free absorption opacity. Although it's much smaller, it's still large enough so that the optical depth seen by a photon scattered many times within the disk is still much bigger than 1. And the free-free absorption opacity is also large enough so that gas and radiation come to thermal equilibrium on a time much less than the orbital time. And as a result, throughout these calculations, the temperature of the radiation and the temperature of the gas are almost exactly equal. And the final thing on this plot is the half-thickness of the disk, which in the Shikura-Sanyaev model is about equal to the Schwarzschild radius, and it's independent of distance from the central body.
Is this hydrodynamic? Can you specify an alpha or MHD?
This is just a way to choose the initial conditions that will fill the box. So this is just a Shikura-Sanyaev model, just with alpha equals 0.01. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of the simulations in terms of alpha. So we have a domain, we have a density and a temperature, and now we just put in some magnetic field and solve the equations of radiation MHD to see what happens. So the equations solved are correct just to order unity in V on C, so we're neglecting relativistic effects entirely. The terms in black are the hydrodynamic terms. Terms in green are magnetic, so here's the Lorentz force and the field evolution equation. And the terms in red are radiation treated in the flux-limited diffusion approximation. Because the optical depth is much larger than 1, the flux limiter lambda here, which relates the radiation flux to the gradient in radiation energy density, lambda is almost exactly 1/3. So the diffusion coefficient for radiation is C divided by 3 times chi times rho, where chi is the total opacity, or basically the electron scattering opacity. This is the diffusion coefficient for radiation, and that'll turn out to be important later. Also, we have separate energy equations for the radiation and the gas. And it'll also turn out to be important what terms we include in the energy equation for the radiation. So here's a transport term, which represents the advection of photons along with the fluid. Here's a term for diffusion of photons with respect to the fluid. And here's a PdV type term, which represents the squeezing of the photons by the flow, so the flow can do work on the radiation field. And finally, we have a pair of terms here, proportional to the free-free opacity kappa. This term, the first one within the brackets here, represents emission of photons at the blackbody rate by the gas, and then the second one here represents absorption of photons by the gas. And one other thing to notice with these equations is, in our local box, the force due to gravity breaks up into a centrifugal force and a Coriolis force. So next I want to go on and show you the results from solving these equations with initially uniform vertical magnetic fields. Yes, it is. Very, very large. So the optical depth through the entire Shikura-Sanyaev model is at least 10 to the 4 for scattering, and at least a few hundred for photons scattered many times between emission and escape from the disk. So here are densities on the surfaces of the computational domain from three different calculations with initially uniform vertical fields. all these three calculations are at location A, where the radiation pressure is 125 times the gas pressure, and there are the number of grid zones is 32 by 32 by 128 along the orbit. And the first calculation at the top right here, we include radiation with the standard opacities, and we choose a field strength for the initially uniform vertical field so that four of the most unstable wavelengths of the magnetorotational instability fit in the box height. And this means that the distance radiation can diffuse per orbit is about half of that wavelength. So we might expect that gas and radiation are somewhat coupled over the scale that will be present in the turbulence, but not completely coupled. The second calculation, the middle one here, it's identical, except that the scattering opacity is 100 times larger. That means the distance photons can diffuse per orbital period is only 1/20th or so of the initial MRI wavelength. So the radiation is quite tightly coupled to the gas in the turbulence in this case. And then in the third calculation, we take the radiation away and replace it by an equal amount of extra gas pressure and do not solve the radiation terms. And all three results are shown at the same time, 20 orbits, on the same logarithmic density scale. And the density fluctuations are much smaller in the no radiation and high opacity cases than in the case with the standard opacity and radiation. And the reason is that in the standard opacity case, the radiation is able to diffuse. So if a region in the gas is being squeezed by the magnetic field, the radiation then leaks out, and it's largely the gas pressure which resists the magnetic squeezing. Whereas in the other two cases, you have radiation pressure and gas pressure, or in this case, a much larger gas pressure to resist the squeezing by the magnetic field. And the ratio of radiation pressure to gas pressure at this time in the turbulence when some heating has occurred is about 300, and the magnetic pressure is about 30 times the gas pressure. And that's why we're able to get such large density excursions. So the range here is a factor of 10 in density. That's fine. So the 2D calculations
were never done with uniform vertical field.
That's right. You can't do that in axisymmetry.
So is that the difference?
That's part of it. And another part is that there we chose for most of the simulations an initial field strength such that radiation pressure and magnetic pressure were about equal, which means that we had a larger ratio of magnetic pressure to gas pressure. That's why we're able to get a larger range in density. So again, here it's true that the density range is about equal to the ratio of magnetic to gas pressure. Next, I want to look at the accretion stress in those same three calculations. So for each one, there are two curves, and the solid line shows the magnetic stress, and the dotted line shows the hydrodynamic stress. And if I hadn't labeled these to let you know which set of curves goes with which calculation, it might be a little hard to tell because the time average values aren't noticeably different. And the overall form of the time variation is also pretty similar. So this tells us that if you have a vertical magnetic flux, then the stress is largely independent of the radiation pressure and the gas pressure. And we've also done additional calculations where we vary the strength of that initial magnetic field, and the stress does turn out to depend on that. So if you have a magnetic flux in these local calculations, that sets the accretion stress. So next I want to go on and look at the work that is done on the gas, on the fluid in the box, by these accretion stresses. So here are the equations that are being solved again. And if the two energy equations for radiation and gas are added, the emission and absorption terms, which have opposite signs, just cancel. If we also integrate over the whole domain, which remember is periodic, so nothing can escape, then the transport terms, the advection terms, and the photon diffusion terms, which just move energy around in the box, they integrate to zero. and we're just left with a time rate of change of the sum of these two energy densities depends on the compression terms. So that equation, summed and integrated over the domain equation looks like this. There's one term that I haven't told you about yet, which is artificial viscosity. In order to make shocks stable in our numerical treatment, we have to add extra energy in regions of strong convergence. So there is one other way in which the total heat in the box can change. Now let's look at how those terms contribute in the same three calculations. So on each panel there are three curves, and the dotted line is the heating due to the artificial viscosity. And it's about the same in the calculation without radiation, the one with high opacity, and the one with standard opacity. On the other hand, the second group of terms, the PdV heating, is largest in the case with radiation, significantly larger than in the other two cases. And the reason is that in the radiation case, you can have squeezed regions in the gas, which are then hotter than their surroundings. They can lose some energy by diffusion. And the net result is that the work that you did in squeezing the gas has been partly converted into photon energy, which has escaped into the surroundings. And when the magnetic field releases its grip, the gas won't expand back to its original state. And some of the work that was done is irreversibly converted into photon energy. But then the third curve on each of these plots is the work that's been done by the accretion stresses. And that, even in the case with radiation, that curve is about a factor of 5 times higher at each time. So what this means is that some energy is being lost from the calculation. In fact, most of the energy is being lost from the calculation. Only about 20% of the gravitational energy that's been released, or the shear energy that's been released, has been captured as heat. And the rest has been lost through numerical effects. And we believe it's due to numerical dissipation of the magnetic field. So in the future, in order to go into stratified calculations, we must find a numerical scheme which conserves total energy, because there the total amount of heating will set the vertical structure of the disk. Now I want to move on to the calculations that have no net magnetic flux initially and throughout the calculation. So here, initially, the vertical component of the field varies as the sine of the radius, and the azimuthal component varies as the cosine. So the magnitude of the field is initially independent of position in the box. All of the calculations that I'm going to describe in this section of the talk are at location B, where the radiation pressure is only 10 times the gas pressure. And they have a higher resolution for reasons which will soon become clear. There are 64 zones in the height, 64 in the radius, and 256 in the azimuthal direction. And here are images of three different variables from our standard radiation case after 80 orbits, when turbulence is well established. And each of these panels is a slice through the disk midplane, all at the same time. And in this calculation, at this time, a typical wavelength in the vertical direction for the magnetorotational instability is about 1/20th of the box height. A typical distance which radiation can diffuse per orbit is about a factor of 3 larger than that. And that means that the radiation is quite thoroughly decoupled from the gas on the scale at which the turbulence is being driven. So the three variables that are shown, the top one is the magnetic stress, and you can see that it's quite patchy. So the magnetic field is strong in a small region here and quite weak over large regions elsewhere. Corresponding to the regions of strong field are places where the density is low. And the reason is that the magnetic pressure contributes to the total pressure in these little regions, and their overpressure causes them to expand, and so you have a low density. And the density contrast typically is maybe 10% compared with their surroundings. On the other hand, the lower panel, which shows basically the 1/4 root of the radiation energy density, it's much smoother. And if you look at places where the density is low, the temperature is not as low compared with the surroundings. And a typical contrast is only about 1% or less in the temperature. So what's happening is that the diffusion, which is decoupling the radiation from the gas, is allowing the radiation distribution to smooth out, whereas the density stays more clumpy. So now I want to look at the conditions under which we might expect better coupling between the radiation and the disturbances. So I'm going to compare the vertical wavelength of the MRI, which in no radiation calculations in the past has been shown to be the shortest scale in the turbulence. So in order for the coupling to be good, that scale has to be longer than the distance that radiation can diffuse per orbit. So this is the diffusion coefficient for radiation that I mentioned before. But both the Alfvén speed and the square root of this diffusion coefficient depend on the inverse square root of the density. So if you're doing a ratio between these two quantities, the densities scale out, and you get an absolute model-independent value for the vertical field strength that you must have in order to have good coupling between the gas and the radiation on the scale of the MRI. Now, I want to ask you to make two leaps of faith with me. The first one is to assume that the Shikura-Sanyaev model is correct and the stress is proportional to the total pressure. In that case, the quantity in brackets here in the second equation is equal to the accretion stress. So then we come down to this equation here. But then the second leap of faith is to assume that those stresses in the Shikura-Sanyaev model are actually due to MRI-driven turbulence. And if that's true, then we might expect that the stress is about 20 times the vertical magnetic pressure. That's what has been found in previous calculations like by Hawley, Gammy, and Balbus, and others. But this 20 is about the same as this 6 pi. So that means this inequality is very difficult to satisfy by a large margin. And it means that in a Shikura-Sanyaev disk, we can expect marginal coupling between gas and radiation. So now I want to look in a bit more detail at the simulation results to see how a Shikura-Sanyaev initial condition evolves. This plot basically shows that the vertical wavelength of the MRI and the accretion stress depend on gas pressure. So here are results from two calculations without radiation. Perhaps I should first tell you what the axes are. So I've taken the domain average magnetic pressure, basically, and from it calculated a typical wavelength for the MRI, and that's shown in units of the box height, h. So this top calculation here is a zero net flux run with the radiation replaced by extra gas pressure. And in that case, once the field weakens a bit, but then we get saturated turbulence, and a typical wavelength for the MRI in the vertical direction in that case is 10% of the box height on this log scale. On the other hand, in this calculation here, we didn't add any extra gas pressure. We just took away the radiation and didn't solve any radiation terms. And in that case, the accretion stress at saturation is significantly lower. So the accretion stress depends on the gas pressure. Here's the same kind of plot with two radiation calculations. The standard opacity run, for which I showed you those three panels of different variables, that's shown by the red curve here. And a version of it with 100 times larger scattering opacity is shown by the blue curve. And the distance that photons can diffuse per orbit in the standard opacity case is shown by the dotted red line. Notice that initially the MRI wavelength was just a little bit longer than the diffusion scale, but over time the magnetic field grew weaker, and as a result in the well-established turbulence down here, the MRI wavelength is a lot less than the diffusion scale, and the turbulence is poorly coupled to the radiation. Finally, I've tried an experiment here at 90 orbits. I restarted the calculation with the opacity suddenly increased to the same value that we had in the high opacity case, and the accretion stress came up to this value here. So I think it's a little early to say just what the saturation value is in this case, but it seems pretty clear that it's going to be lower in the case with standard opacity than in the case with high opacity. And the final aspect of the zero net magnetic flux calculations that I want to show is the rate at which the PDV work contributes to the increase in total energy density. So here this is a rate now, and again it's true that the PDV terms are contributing to heating at a rate about 20% of the rate at which the accretion stresses are actually releasing energy. So again, there is some heating, but we're not capturing most of the energy that's being released. So the main results from these simulations. First, it's the same with radiation or without if you have a net magnetic flux in these local calculations. That flux determines what the accretion stress is. But that's a little artificial because the disk doesn't know about having some small patch with a fixed magnetic flux. So perhaps more interesting are the calculations where you have no magnetic flux and where the flow can determine its own field strength. And in those cases, it seems that the accretion stress may depend on how well the radiation is coupled to the fluctuations. And it seems likely that for disk models which aren't too far away from the Shikura-Sanyaev case, the accretion stress will turn out to be determined by the gas pressure. But I wouldn't say that that's certain at this point. Another main result is that the density fluctuations are produced by magnetic forces. And if we have good coupling, that means small density fluctuations because the radiation pressure is able to resist the magnetic forces. On the other hand, if the coupling is weak, then we can get very large excursions in density. And this could affect the mean opacity of the disk as a whole. And then the final result is that photon damping can be an important way to convert the released energy into photon energy, but perhaps not the main way to do that. So some questions for the future. It seems likely that the vertical structure of accretion disk is going to be set by two important balances. One is a balance between energy release and cooling. And the energy release perhaps is due to photon damping and some kind of dissipation of the magnetic field on the one hand. And that's balanced by cooling processes, which can include diffusion, as Shikura and Sanyaev originally suggested. It can also include convection. It could include photon bubble modes, which John Ahrens and Charles Gammy have studied. And it could also include turbulent transport. If the disk is being stirred by the MRI constantly, then as each parcel of gas passes near the surface, it can deliver its radiation and be cooled that way. The second important balance is between magnetic dynamo action and losses of the magnetic field. So the magnetic field can decrease through work done on the flow, so the PDV heating may actually contribute to a slight weakening of the magnetic field. There can also be dissipation, and its rate is artificially high in these calculations. So our magnetic field strength is probably lower than it really should be. And one effect that really hasn't been explored yet is the effect of buoyancy on the magnetic field. And that can be enhanced by diffusion of radiation into rising regions. So exactly what kind of equilibrium we'll set up between all of these gain processes for the magnetic field and the loss processes is a very important question to be explored in the future. And then even a bit further ahead is, how do these balances vary with radius? How do they vary with the ratio of the luminosity to the Eddington luminosity? Is there any way that we can actually get good coupling between the gas and the radiation? That's all. There is significant reconnection and we're not capturing it. So we've done a few calculations with a partial total energy scheme in which we compute total energy immediately before the field update, and then again immediately after, and the difference, the extra difference, goes into heating the gas. And in that case, maybe not all of the remaining 80% of the energy is captured, but almost all of it is recaptured. So there may also be some numerical viscous losses, but it seems that the numerical magnetic losses are the most important contribution.
Where do you see the limitations of the flexible diffusion technique? And when you reach those limitations, where do you think the next advance will be?
Well, the limitations are going to come as soon as we try to do stratified calculations. So, for instance, if we're getting large density fluctuations near the surface of the disk, then in flux-limited diffusion, the directionality of the radiation is not explicitly included. So, for instance, you cannot cast shadows. So if you have a blob of gas sitting above the surface of the disk, the radiation will fill in behind it. And so we could get the rate at which the disk is radiatively cooled wrong using flux-limited diffusion, and therefore the vertical structure wrong. So then perhaps we can use one of the more expensive methods, like a full variable Eddington factor, which involves actually integrating the transfer equation along a whole bunch of rays. So that means a factor of 10 or 30 more computation time.
Your boxes are not thermally unstable. So they are different from the Shapura-Sunyaev solution, is it? I understand it because the stress is not proportional, it's never proportional to the total pressure, right? Or I misunderstood something. Is it, and if it is true, is it because you don't have enough coupling between radiation, and I mean, could you change it if the coupling was stronger?
In order to study that instability, I think we would need to do a stratified calculation again. And I expect that it would be possible to reproduce that instability if we did have good coupling between the gas and the radiation. We have not done that.
Any more questions?